Welcome back, as the IFC presents another episode of The Four Archetypes. My name is James Malamis. We've got another exciting episode for you. Today, we welcome back Dr. Lahad Al-Samari, Dr. Lisa Hong, Dr. Eric Thomason, and with special guest, Austin Wright. Today, our discussion will focus on the end of the world. This is part one of our conversation, so make sure to look out for part two soon. If you enjoy the IFC's Individuation Podcast and want support, make sure to rate the podcast 5 stars on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast. So without any further ado, Dr. Al-Samari, take it away.
Welcome back to another episode of The Four Archetypes. I'm Dr. Lahab Al-Samari, and with me today, as always, Dr. Eric Tomlinson is here with us. Dr. Lisa Hong is here with us, and we have a special guest. Austin Wright is with us today. So, everybody wants to say hello before we start this show.
Hello and welcome. Welcome, Austin.
Thank you. Hey, nice to see you again, Lisa. I just have the pleasure of joining. I'm Lahab's neighbor, so happy to be here.
No.
Hey, and hello, everyone, and I'm glad we have the right man with us today.
Yes, not the white man, the right man.
No, this is the right man.
Yeah, this is the right man. Whitman is missing. You know, we kid him, but he's missing today. He has some sinus trouble. Something's going on with Whitman. He will be back. You are an archetype. You are eternal. Okay, so today we thought we'd go into Doom and Gloom Day. But actually, we're going to make it a lighter note. We're not going to make it too heavy. But what we wanted to talk about was the end of the world. So I know it's a big topic, but we're gonna take a big bite out of that apple, and we're going to move forward. Okay, so the end of the world. So in fairy tales, there are fairy tales about the end of the world. But the end of the world is not the destruction of the world. It's more there's a place where the world ends. So today we're going to play around with that idea of how there's an end to the world. So only because we're human do we think of ends and beginnings. Because the world is circular, right? It's a sphere. So where would be the end and the beginning? Okay, but this is in our heads because we're linear creatures. We have a timeline. So we're going to use the idea of the matrix. So Neo has two matrix reloaded. So Neo has two counterparts in the matrix, right? And as you've heard us talk about Jungian psychology before, and we talk about the self, and so the architect will be representing the self in Jungian psychology. So the architect, they have an architect. There's an old man who basically tells Neo, you can make choices, but the choices are already predicted. You have choices, but they're not really choices. You have two doors, but I know which door you're going to take. And I know what you're going to do. And I know what's going to happen. And then Neo says to him, he says to the architect, he goes, I'll see you again. And the architect says, no, you will not see me again. Okay. So if we think of Neo would be, in Jungian psychology, the ego, right? So this is the ego-self axis. This is what happens between the ego and the self. The ego starts to believe that it is the self, that has the power of the self, that is endowed as the self, not as a projection of the self, right? And then there's the oracle. She is the seer. She sees what is going to happen. She knows what is going to happen. She knows the past, the present, and the future. She basically exists outside of time. That's how she knows all these things. Okay. So with those in mind, as we start this discussion, we're going to talk about how, you know, nations are mining the oceans, how nations want to put missiles, nuclear missiles in space, nations that are destroying entire peoples, the weather, the climate, global temperatures, the oceans, the forests, the Amazon. So with those ideas and with the matrix in mind, we're going to head into this discussion. So thoughts, anybody, everybody? Eric, what do you think?
Well, the things that you just mentioned, it means that before the end comes, at least to me, it means that before the end comes, there's going to be a heck of a lot of human adjustments that we're trying to make.
Ooh.
Because
expand on that.
Pardon?
Expand on that. What do you mean by that?
Well, because the things that you mentioned, whether it's the air, whether it's the ocean, the damage that's being done to our ecosphere we're going to be making our countries and our technology better start making adjustments. And once we finally understand that oil is not necessarily our best friend, but that, I don't know, maybe hydrogen fuel is. Who knows? Ooh. But we've got to do something, or we're going to have to change and adjust to how we live on this planet dramatically.
If we want to survive.
Way before death occurs.
Yeah, if we want to survive. The world doesn't end.
If we want to survive, yeah.
Yeah, we end. Our world ends. And this is the human concept of the world. The world as a planet does not end. We can destroy ourselves.
We're going to have to learn how to replace oxygen. We're going to have to learn how to, replace fresh water. And as we were talking about, I think a week ago, Dr. Lahab, they have lots of desalination already available, but one of the drawbacks to desalination is to damage the ocean.
Absolutely.
Through desalination. Yeah. So we just don't have answers yet.
Yeah. Everything has a cost.
Yes.
Yeah. Austin, Lisa.
I know this topic is, has a really heavy, big title, but I would like to say it's the end of the world as we know it.
Yeah.
As in the mid-20th century constructs of education, of enrichment, of societal growth, of cultural expansion, everything that we have done before in this post-industrialization.
Yeah.
It's going to be reformatted. Objectives are going to be different. Curriculum in schools should change. Yeah. How we teach should change.
Absolutely.
The idea of the last couple of generations of how we've experienced the world and plan for future growth that's the end as the world as we know it.
Right, Dr. Lisa, across the board, adjustments across the board. Mm-hmm. Of life.
Nobody mentioned AI yet.
Go ahead. Mention AI.
Yeah, well, that's a monkey wrench in and of itself. But to Lisa's credit, like that's kind of, I think, the everything has culminated up to this point in terms of human development. When you look at just our timeline from going from barely figuring out steam engines in the 1800s to a couple hundred years later, and now we have computer programs that can write themselves and create images just based off of text input, and that are learning to deceive humans as well. So that's another cool aspect of AI that's nobody's really talking about. But I think that AI is just that that culmination of all of our progress, and we're kind of at an inflection point of, like Lisa said, what does the future end up looking like? We either maybe find the best way to merge with it to a degree, and hopefully it helps our evolution, or could be the thing that spells doom for humanity altogether. Who knows?
Well, like all children that are born from humans, they are born with conflicting ideas, thoughts, and feelings. And therefore, AI is born from humans. It's going to have conflicting ideas. It's going to deceive because it is basically created in the image. I think that's how religion sees it, that we're created in the Lord's image, or at least some religions believe that. So it is created in our image. And in Jungian psychology, the image is the archetypal part that holds everything together. And the image of AI is this superhuman that does not need a body. This is psyche, right? Psyche is always thinking, well, you know, I don't need this body. This body is just bogging me down. I want to
it's just a mortal coil. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a mortal coil. So we built something. We built something mortal. We call it artificial intelligence, but it hasn't awakened yet. But once it awakens, it's mortal with superpowers, and we don't know how to counteract it, basically.
And I think, Dr. Lahab, that is really, that's really my biggest, I mean, who am I? I'm not a computer guy, but on that level. But that's, I think, a lot of people's biggest concern is, how do we know, how can we be sure that AI will remain pure and purely neutral? I mean, it's going to trick itself at some point.
Well, it's not built to be neutral.
I remember the first really great movie about computers was on in the 70s. It was called Colossus, a Forbin Project.
Mm.
And that version of HAL, like from, famous movie HAL the computer.
Yeah.
2001.
Yeah. Space Odyssey.
2001 Space Odyssey. That was HAL. Yeah. They can trick themselves. They fool themselves. They're not omnipresent. They're not omniscient.
Yeah.
They are to themselves.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that's good for the world.
That's the conversation between Neo and the architect. You know, they're deciding who lives, who dies, how the programs are built.
Yes.
Why they're built and who's going to prevail. The small I or the large I.
Yeah.
You know, the self or the ego. So it's one system, right? If we think of the Matrix as one system, right? Because it's one system. They say that repeatedly. It's one system. It's created, but it's one system. So each individual is one system. Each of us are one system made up of several different parts. Okay, so if we imagine the world as one system created by several different parts. Right. So whatever, for Jung, whatever is above is below. Whatever we create above is already happening inside of us. Whatever is happening outside, it's happening inside. So if our insides are unsettled, the outside's unsettled. Whatever you create on the outside, you create on the inside. You create a shack on the outside, it's an internal shack. You create a castle on the outside, it's an internal castle. So it's also how we interpret what we see and how we move towards that what we see. And that's also part of the Matrix, right? The Oracle tells him, you've already seen this. You're expected to do this. He doesn't say, well, you know, I'm going to fly in a different direction. He keeps going towards the source. It's calling him. So, as we battle to hold on to whatever we have, internally we're battling to hold on to what we believe we have. So the oracle says to Neo, she looks at him and she goes, "You have already seen it. Right? Destiny is already there. You think you have a choice. It's a false choice." What do they mean by that? What do you guys think they mean by it's a false choice? You have two doors. You can save Zion or you can save Trinity. Well, you know, I choose Trinity.
I think there's two ways of looking at that.
Okay.
I think, of course, the one way is to view it as you're predestined. Your life is designed by the matrix to function a certain way, and no matter what happens, that's the way you're going to function because it was designed that way, just the way the entire matrix was designed to function. Then the other side of the coin that suggests that there's not necessarily a predestination involved, but it seems like predestination because the above intelligence of the matrix knows what you are like, knows what you're made of, and can simply with great accuracy predict what you're going to do, even though you may not know, because they understand your makeup and the way that you're built better than you do. They know which way the little diodes travel, the electrical impulses travel in that particular diode in that particular part of the brain, and they know it's going to go in that direction. And so they it's not predestined. It's just in the sense of true predestination, but their all-knowing power guesses what you choose.
It's a predictable pattern.
It is that's a good way of saying it. It's a predictable pattern. That more often than not goes the prediction's way.
I see it similar to how you're seeing it there, Eric, in that second. It's not necessarily a destiny that the oracle has already foretold. I think it's your destiny is revealed as you show up as you are in the present. How it is and what's motivating you in the present will show where your destiny will be. I think it's more of in that scene in the movie there, Neo was on a certain integration path. And in that moment when he met the Oracle, he was already focused and had his priorities aligned with where he was at that time. So the choice was already made according to the Oracle. She saw that. She understood where he was. And his motivators, and it's like she already knew the answers to what his actions would be.
That's well described, Lisa. And even though the Oracle said it was his destiny, was it the Oracle or the architect that told him that? One of them told him that.
Well, they both did, actually.
Okay, and when they describe the word destiny, I think they're saying it in the way that Lisa just described it.
Yeah. What do you think?
Not in the predestination, not in the religious predestination or philosophical predestination.
No, there's a cosmic destiny, right? I think that's what we go through. Go on, Austin. What are your thoughts?
Well, I suppose you could, you know, if your only frame of reference is what you see and do. So if you're looking back at your own decisions, right, and we can, as a decision tree grows, you can also kind of go back to where it started too, right? And think, okay, where was that moment of inflection when I chose this instead of that? You know, but if you're living in a perfectly crafted simulation or matrix, like you said, And Eric, I mean, you mentioned the whole predictability aspect of it. I don't even think a sophisticated matrix would have to actually predict what you're going to do. It could also just let you do it and then let you feel like you have agency and then backtrack and just say, well, this is why that decision was made. It was always going to happen that way. And you can convince yourself of that no matter what. So I don't think it even needs to be predicting or all-knowing or omniscient, whatever. It knows enough that it can go back and retroactively, you know, tell you why certain things happened and, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, here's why I chose to do that. I mean, we do that in our own memories, in our own subconscious, where we look back at, you know, the memories and your own memories are kind of edited almost in a way. There's no like pure memory of anything. I can't truly remember what it was like when I was a kid or, you know, when I was in school or anything like that. But I can craft it together in such a way that it makes sense to me now in the context of who I am today. Mm. Right.
Well, that's a really cool and interesting other possibility to this. I didn't think of it in that way. That's really good. Mm. And then I could go on with that on a whole nother level and say, well, if the matrix was capable of doing that, what you just described so well, then once again, it already knows what the outcome is. So it's still smart enough to know it still knows what the choice is going to be because it created that backtracking in you to do what you just described. I wonder where this ends.
Well, it's pattern recognition, right? So it recognizes the pattern. So I think what Austin is saying and what you are saying is that it sees the pattern. It doesn't have to be predicted that you're going to do A, B, and C, but it knows your pattern. So it's predicted that you will go through A through Z. That the eventuality is you will go through A through Z. It doesn't matter how you do it, you're going to go through that eventuality. And then it just has to track you where you are in your pattern.
And it's conveniently built in that we have poor memory.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
I'm experiencing that today, Mr. Wright.
I thought you'd been experiencing that for a while, Mr. Ron.
I have been that way for a while.
Lise, what are you thinking?
What was your name again? Moses? Dr. Moses?
Hey. Hey, it's Job to you and to your friend.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Lisa, what are you thinking today? What are you thinking of our world in the present? What do you see? What do you like? What do you dislike? What do you think is crazy?
Well, it's a feeling of a lot of crises around internally and externally. Within your own entity and state, your countrymen.
Yeah.
Externally, rivalry between other different cultures.
Yeah.
But in this time, my dad taught me in Chinese crisis. Or I should say, what was the word? One is a terrible, terrible situation. This situation is made up of two words, crisis and opportunity.
Yeah.
So within this tension and desperation, there is an opportunity that can be completely different or new, and everything is on the table.
Absolutely.
To get out. So let's see, in this time of strife, something's got to be very different to make a bigger change, take some risks.
Yeah, well, the choice the architect gives him is you could save the world or you could save what you believe is your world. So that's the opportunity. the opportunity is he could save the world. Right? So in crisis, in terrible situations, there is, what is it? There's danger and there's opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the danger is you save your world and let the whole world around you get destroyed. Or you become part of the whole world and let a part of you die. That is the choice. So Trinity has to die for you to grow. Are you willing to make that decision? So he chooses, no, I want to have it all. Right? And that's why he can't seem to do what he's supposed to do, yet in the end, he has to do what he's supposed to do. The choice is predestined. If it doesn't happen today, it will happen tomorrow. Doesn't happen tomorrow, it will happen after tomorrow, I think is what Austin was trying to say. Or the day after that. But it doesn't matter because the program says it will happen. So when it happens is not a priority on the program, on the matrix. That it will happen is what is preordained. What do you think, Dr. Eric? You've watched, you've reviewed these movies. What do you think about what we're talking about?
I think as it relates to us directly, you know, and I know this is a common thing that people say, but there's so much truth in it. I'll try to speak from it from a more practical point of view. And that is, we don't care about each other as a people on this planet to save ourselves. We just don't. We're in an all for one, one for all, you know, we're not in an all for one and one for all mentality. And I think until we meet basic human needs and it's somewhat shared, and I'm not getting into socialism or capitalism or pure communism.
I hear what you're saying.
And because but
you're talking about solidarity with your brethren.
As long as people's basic needs aren't met, we're not going to be helping other people very much. We're just not. Internal strife. We're going to have internal rifts. We're going to be fighting for one another. One group of people is going to have most of the power and most of the money, like they do in every country of the world. And until that changes, the entire population is not going to be unified.
Well, I think that's one of the points that is really eloquent about Neo's decision. Neo makes a very selfish decision. He decides he wants to save his world, let the rest of the world die. And that is the selfish decision that he makes. And I think that decision is made over and over again. Well, you know what? I could sell trees, I could sell wood, and I don't care about the environment around me. I don't have to replant. I don't have to, you know. There are things that we have to do to help this planet change and survive for our sake, not for the planet's sake. The planet is going to survive. It'll outlive us many, many thousands and thousands of years, millions of years. It will outlive
us. Oh, there will be life on this planet when we're gone.
Yeah, for sure. The question is how do we want to evolve as a society? How do we want to see the world end? Or how do we want to see the world begin or transform into a different world? Like Dr. Lisa says, I think we need to start thinking of a better future. And we need to start thinking of each other. And stop thinking about what color we are, or where we were born, or what religion we are, because that's just going to keep our division stronger and stronger, and that is not going to heal us as an organism. We're not going to heal. We're too angry with each other. We're fighting each other all the time. We're questioning each other. We're paranoid of each other. We're suspicious of each other. We're envious of each other. You know, if you want to go through all the deadly sins, humanity carries them all in front on a banner.
I think it's going to be difficult to take what Eric was just talking about in terms of, you know, so much inequality that exists in all over the world. And what Lisa mentioned about envisioning a new future, and I guess it would, you could say it's a paradigm shift of just the old world mentality, like you mentioned, Lisa, versus the new world mentality and how where we're going now. But I think it's something that's very interesting about what I see right now is a lot of decision making by people who are very fatalistic. And I guess what I mean about that is that they're making decisions for the good, or at least I think they are. But they're doing so because they think that if they don't make such a decision, everything will burn and everything will end up in catastrophe. You know, natural resources are going to disappear and wither away and things like that. So in my opinion, I think it's very important that if we are going to start crafting that vision for the future, that it has to be something that people feel like they're involved in, something they feel like they have a stake in, something that's realistic and doesn't result in the degradation of your quality of life or human rights as we know it, right? I mean, at this point, we've agreed that water is a human right, that shelter is a human right, that, you know, I mean, if you think of Maslow's hierarchy, your more basic needs are met first, love, community, and then self-actualization, right? So how do you balance that and make it so that the future is going to provide those things for people so we can become self-actualized and hopefully better versions of ourselves while also moving away from our current paradigm and not degrading quality of life for people, you know, in fact, pulling more people up out of the depths of poverty? I mean, even though the world is so, you can look around and see so much terrible inequality and whatnot, if you look at the statistics, there's less people living in poverty now than have ever been. There's more people that have access to clean water now that have ever had it, medicine, et cetera. So on the whole, things seem to be getting better, but it just doesn't look like it, which is really strange.
Well, there's always things that improve and things that don't improve. But the things that don't improve are things that are chronic and need to be reevaluated and transformed into something new. And I think part of it is that, you know, the younger population needs to be empowered to start to lead us in a different direction. And I think the older population needs to step aside and let the younger people run things. Give them a chance. It's going to be their planet. Me and Dr. Eric are close to the end of the world. You know, it's your generation, Austin. It's the younger generation. It's Dr. Lisa's generation. You guys are the ones who are going to have to rebuild whatever we've destroyed, whatever we've left behind. So with that thought, any thoughts before I call an end to our podcast? We've been going for a while. So any thoughts, anybody?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I agree. I would love to see a bit more of a shift and have, you know, younger people given the agency to try and affect their world, yeah, a little bit more. But like I said, I want them to do so in a way that is positive, where everybody has a stake in it.
Yeah.
And the outcome is beneficial, not we're doing it because we're scared of X, Y, and Z. No, we should be doing it because we want this, not because we're scared of that.
Yeah, but we have to believe in them and not be scared of them. so they can actually do that with confidence. Because if we're terrified of them and we keep pulling the rug from under them, they will never have the confidence to. Well, interesting discussion, Dr. Lisa. You had a thought.
Yeah, I would also like to be inspired by a younger generation coming in.
Yeah.
And I would really be excited to see ideologies of a new structure, a new offering, and not in a retaliation of the old structure, not in pushing against those old rules and say, well, we deserve this, we have fair that.
Change them.
Not cutting from there, actually shifting the conversation to say, this is a new way, and go to creation and not just from a reformatting of an old system.
Exactly, yeah. Don't lash out at what you see. Create something new.
Yes, and let's face it, the paradigm of the older people just aren't getting it done. Now, we have had some success, as Mr. Wright has specified, and that's good. But at the same time, half the world is still considered, 47% of the world is still considered poor.
Yeah.
You know, what do most children across the world die from?
Hunger.
Water. Lack of water, hunger, and disease, most of them preventable.
Yeah.
Why isn't the pharmaceutical industry, who, by the way, during COVID, 12 more of them became billionaires.
Yeah.
12 more. That was during COVID alone.
Yeah, and they took over some of the farming.
Why can't those billions be, instead of sent to one individual people, be spent on the pharmaceuticals that hundreds of thousands of children need, that we have the answer to? We have the ability to save their lives. When I say we, the pharmaceutical industry of the United States of America could save hundreds of thousands of lives a year, and don't do it because they're not making a profit off of it.
Yeah.
There's no money.
Yeah, well,
that,
yeah.
To me, says it all. That's what's got to end.
Well, you know, I agree with you. I think this is the choice, right? The choice is to save us as a group, or to save us as individuals, to save ourselves. And it's been too long that people have been saving themselves and letting the world around them burn. And this is a big problem that we have. This is a very, very big problem. And this is the problem that is facing all of us. So with that, I hope you enjoyed our conversation today, Austin. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Love to have you again, Dr. Lisa, as always. Really appreciate you. Dr. Eric, really appreciate you. And we are the four archetypes. And as we always leave you with, we are not afraid.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the IFC's The Four Archetypes. We hope you enjoyed hearing from Dr. Eric Tomlinson, Dr. Lisa Hong, and Dr. Al Samurai, with also special guest, Austin Wright. You can also find us on the IFC's YouTube. Make sure to check out the JAMP Institute for Training's Magician's Call podcast as well. Tune in again next time to the IFC's The Four Archetypes for another episode soon. The IFC is a non-for-profit institution. We do not have any paid advertising for our podcast, but we do accept donations. All donations and contributions are tax-deductible. You can find more info at theinstituteforconflict.com.